irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
Written by an old good friend of mine named Rick Gilman, and he's written it, and he graciously has donated it to be our opening music for the Writer's Block. And after 7 years, we actually have our own music, Richard.
Hey, da-da. There you go.
You are listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is the award-winning, well, that's a lie, but it sounds good, radio show, The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, in studio with Mr. Richard Polinelli, not only a friend, my co-host, but also my business partner. Hi, Rich.
Hey, Jim, what's going on?
It just gets better. Every day it gets better and better and better.
Well, every day
I'm still alive is a bonus.
There you go. Well, you know how my adventurous day has gone.
I did. Yeah. Richard's had problems with his internet all day, and so he already pre-warned us. If he shuts off, he's going to add rum to his Coke, and he's going to come back on the air. So... I understand that you have a couple announcements, Richard. Why don't you go ahead and get those out of the way?
Yeah, we have a couple of books that are coming out. There's one, well, actually both should be in a way familiar to our listeners. About 3 years ago, we had a show where we were talking about Gibson Michael's last book, Erie. And just to give a quick recap, Gibson had passed away 2017 while he was working on this book. And several of us have gotten together. We have finished it. Fortunately, he was pretty close to the end. We've got everything all done, all the formatting, all that good stuff. It will be out on the fourth anniversary of his passing, which is September 7th. It's called Erie. You can pre-order it now. If you're into sci-fi fantasy, you know, I recommend this book, not just because I was part of the team that finished it, but it was a very good story. And you know, I wish we could have gotten what his actual words were going to be at the end, but I think we got it as close as we could. So that book is available for pre-order on Amazon. And Tuscany Bay Books has a book that is coming out this Tuesday. It is by Caroline Giamanco, who is a former guest of ours. It is her first fiction novel, and it is a collection of science fiction and paranormal stories called Into the Night. You can go online, again, at Amazon. You can pre-order the Kindle book, and the print book should be going live here in a couple of days. So that's kind of what we got going for book releases. And again, if you're a big fan of science fiction and fantasy and paranormal and all those good things that go bump in the night, here are two books for you to go get.
That's right. And, you know, Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books is becoming quite the imprint in the industry, and we do – our genres primarily are sci-fi. We do westerns. We do paranormal. And anything else that somebody throws at us other than fantasy, we're going to shoot fantasy over to Silver Dawn Publishing, someone that we work in conjunction with in Houston. And they can take care of your fantasy work and your some dystopian, light YA dystopian work as well. So if you have any of those you want to submit, you can submit them through us or through Silver Dawn Publishing. Okay. I'm not going to get further into ado. I need to introduce this guy. He is like, he's a quintessential guy. He's been assisting people in their search for inner meaning for 40 years. He is currently living in the Sierra foothills of Northern California, where he works with several dozen seekers of the truth, Over the years, he has deliberately resisted the trend to become a traveling guru with followers around the world in favor of preserving an element which he considers precious, that of maintaining opportunities for developing an actual teacher-student relationship. He's available to anyone who seeks his guidance. He has never asked to be compensated for his help, neither monetarily or otherwise. So please welcome to the Writer's Block for his first visit with us here in the craziness of LA Talk Radio, Mr. Justin Gold, or J.J. Gold. Hello, Justin.
Hey there, Jim. Good to be here.
That's wonderful having you. And so explain, you're in California. It is now August, and you have a great tan. Yes, you're not close to the fires, though. I think we covered that the other night.
No, not close enough to have a problem, but close enough to breathe a little smoke.
Yeah.
Well, you sent enough of that over to us in Colorado, so please take it back.
It's not exactly real comforting around here either, especially if you have, you know, sinus problems and everything else going on. So as you can tell, my nose is clogged. So anyway, this is an interesting tome that you sent over. As you said the other night, this is your first picture book. And on each picture, which I assume were taken by you or someone that you knew, you have put down a philosophical comment of sorts, or maybe not. I mean, I don't know what they were. They're certainly meant a lot to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. You want to tell us how pretty much how this book came around?
Well, I started off with the COVID shutdown. I got involved in social media, which I had not gotten involved with before. So I started putting out little quotes every few days. And after a few of those quotes, one of my friends suggested we should try to put these quotes out in some kind of a book, because we got to having maybe 50, 60, 70, some philosophical, some political, some basically about human behavior quotes. And fairly unique, I think. Some not so unique, but many really unique. So I was looking at some of my photographs, as we do, and anybody who likes to travel has to find some way to see foreign places. So we've been getting together to look at some of our old pictures, because we can't go to those places. So we look at the photos, you know, sit and watch them on the wall. And so I had the idea of putting those two things together, the photos and that we've taken from places all over the world that we've traveled in the last 30 or so years, and try to find some correlation between the meaning of the saying and the photo itself. And I think it came out pretty well.
It did. It's interesting correlation, because as you go through the book, I don't even know how to put these. Your comments, I guess, would be the best way of, you know, be it philosophical or otherwise. They tend to get more astute as you go. And towards the end of the book, they're really starting to mean a lot to, well, a lot of them meant a lot to me. And I've traveled the world, not as extensively. I mean, you got pictures of places that I have never been nor ever really want to go. I mean, you know, I'm old now. I'm done with my traveling days. Mm-hmm. But you've got some wonderful photos in there. Looks like a lot of them were just off the cuff here. So let's snap this real quick while we get this, you know, guy galloping a camel across the desert. You don't get right. Those kind of pictures, you know. Uh-huh. But so I was impressed with the way that you put the book together, and I really truly was. But you've also written other books.
Well, I started in the 90s. I wrote a novel, and that was back when there were only 50,000 books put out a year.
Yeah.
And the book could and it did really well. It got to be like bestseller, and that was great. But I stopped writing for quite some time after that. Just maybe a little vignette here and there, and maybe about 5, 6, 7 years later, I started to put together those vignettes. And then I was in Cuba for a while. I wrote a book about Cuba. I wanted to see if I could write an adventure story, which you obviously, I could see, have the skill to do, but I didn't think I could do that. So I I tried to do that, and then I wrote a travel story, and then I wrote a biographical story. So I've written, this would be my fourth or fifth book, and the first time I've used photos. And really, it's been easier because the photos do a lot of talking for you.
Yes, they do.
And I had a lot of fun picking out the photos, and I had a lot of fun putting that book together. The first book was, as I'm sure you know, was a huge challenge figuring out what to say and what not to say.
Yeah.
But this one was a whole lot of fun.
Well, I'm sure it was. I mean, it had to be fun trying to figure out where those photos were going to go and what captions were going with the photos. And it had to sometimes sat you down with you scratching your head going, well, what am I going to say with this one? You know, and obviously, as you said earlier, that the caption has to follow the picture or to some degree.
I think
you did a great job, and I would never even attempt to sit down and try to do a picture book.
Uh-huh. A lot of these photos were taken at social work trips that I've done with friends that I travel with, and that makes it a lot easier if you're taking pictures of kids in situations where that are difficult and third world countries where there's a lot of strife and it's really easy to feel the nature of those stories without having to say very much about them. So had I not had all those pictures, it would have been much more of a task. But a lot of those pictures taken in Cambodia and Thailand and North Africa were taken in less than advantageous situations for the population. So they were interesting pictures in that way. And another thing that we started to do was do puppet shows for kids and refugee kids mostly. And some of the photographs took place in those scenarios. And they're always interesting to see. And certainly looking at the faces of the kids who don't get much of that kind of entertainment. So really, if you have a bunch of really good pictures, it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now you had mentioned that adventure writing. I mean, we write adventure novels. Personally, I write Western novels. Part of my adventure is putting a lot of dead people in my novels because, you know, of course, back then it was an extremely deadly place to live. You know, so a lot of these guys wind up dead, but mm-hmm. they all get, you know, souls, and the souls float to heaven usually or wherever.
Yeah.
Some of them are so busy shaking hands with friends down below, they have time to worry. But Richard is also, Richard is a sci-fi writer. That's his forte. And between the two of us, we managed to get a book written together called The Last Lonely Trail. Is that right? Last Lonely Trail?
Yep, you got it. Yeah.
I forget.
It's been out, what, 3 years?
Yeah, I know. We've talked about it a lot, but still, you know, making sure that we had dead people in that book too was a challenge. Mm-hmm. And Richard came up with those scenarios, so I have to applaud him. He's a bloody guy, Richard.
If I'm going to kill somebody, I'm going to get your money's worth for it, okay? That's in my defense, all right? Anybody can die bumping their car into something. I come up with something special. There you go.
This show, of course, as we spoke the other night, is geared towards new writers. And if you were to have to give a new writer any kind of a bit of advice, what would you give him?
I'd say write what you love and get into the process and forget about the selling part and don't think about the money part and don't think about the fame part. Find other ways to take care of that. Those parts of yourself and get into the love of the writing. And if you can't do that, then it's a job, and it's a job you're not going to really get paid for unless you get very lucky.
Right.
And that's not something to really depend on. I like the idea, you know, when you mentioned the term, which I'm not really familiar with, but I know the term, I don't know the idea so much, of paranormal writing. I consider my writing normal writing, and although I just did finish a science fiction book, which I really liked, but my writing is normal. The theme is that human beings in their normal state are glorious beings, are extraordinary beings. There's a lot of depth and a lot of quality in a human being, a lot to be proud of in just being a human being, not only an American human being or a Black human being or a white or a male or a female, but just to be a human being. And so my quotes are basically, they're about normality. Not normality as it ordinarily happens with strife between people and arguments, but the normality that's beneath that and can be uncovered. And so that's really been, it's a lot easier to write about normality. So I respect anybody who can write, like this book I just finished reading, anything super normal or sci-fi, because you have to have a really vivid imagination. For writing normal, you just have to see what's there.
See
things as they are.
That's exactly right. Hey, we're going to take a real quick break. And you're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block. And we'll be right back, right after a real brief word from LA Talk Radio.
Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And if you've ever thought that you could be a radio host, well, now is certainly your opportunity. Go to www.latalkradio.com, find the link that says be a host, and follow the instructions. You know, everybody's got something to say, and if you've got a show that you think needs to be heard, how about you link up with us? Because we've got 50-minute shows available every day of the week, plus Sundays. So how about giving us a try? That's latalkradio.com, and listen every Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific, for the Writer's Block, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And we are back. And if you want to call and talk to Justin while we've got him on the show tonight, this, of course, is live radio going out worldwide. The number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. And again, that number is 323-203-0815. And you can call and you can talk directly to Justin, and maybe he'll give you a reading over the phone. Who knows? I mean, I wouldn't ask him. Of course, if I did, I wouldn't expect him to, ask for a remuneration. So one thing that you just mentioned, Justin, which I find most writers don't get, most new writers definitely don't get, is don't give up your day job. Writing is a vocation that is thankless, I think. Even if you get really highly popular, it's still a thankless job. People will read your books, and of course, then you find them in airplane pockets, so unless you're John Sanford or Craig Johnson or some of those guys and with those big publishing houses, you're not going to get what you think you ought to get when you write a book. And let's face it, excuse me, not all books are good. We're a little discerning on books that we take to publish. In fact, the one we just did with Caroline, Into the Night, well, we sent back and she had to do a lot of rewriting on it because she was used to writing nonfiction, and writing fiction is a totally different game, as I'm sure you were well aware. You've written both. And writing fiction is a totally different game than writing nonfiction. So it takes a different type of pen to do that. But what is your take on writers today? You mentioned earlier that back when you first wrote your first novel, there was only like 50,000 books a year. That's in direct opposite, of the 150 million books a year now out. Mm-hmm. What are your takes on the writers today? Do you feel their work is good? Is it good enough to make it? Or is it most of it a mediocre type work?
Well, it's hard for me to be impartial because I love to read. So I can get something just about out of anything. I have read some books that were poorly written. I've read some books that were about relatively uninteresting ideas. And I still basically seem to stay with them. And I like anyone who's willing to take me through a story. And I think that's especially because I know the effort that's required. And so there's a certain respect that I have for anybody who tries to put a book together. It's uphill and it's difficult and it's challenging. And so I generally stick with it. My passion for, if I have a passion for writing, is generally about by authors that are no longer alive. Maybe Herman Hesse, maybe a man named René Dumal. So many books that have existed in the past, and I treasure and I read again and again. And I think that's part of what drives me to write, is because I see the lasting power of books, and I see that they can influence people in positive ways, and they can entertain people, and they can delight people, and they can take people into their heart in in different ways, even books about dead people. And you know, they're interesting. Well, you're writing about a time that people know very little about, and it's a way to get to know about that time, you know, the 1800s and the Old West in the United States. How else would you get to know that time but to read books? So I have a value for that, I think. So I don't assess so much how good a writer is. I know that there are people that can write a beautiful poetry about almost nothing, and there are people who can write about an exciting event that's really dynamic and not write so well, and it basically balances out. I am a big fan of books and a big fan of writers, and I didn't grow up much of a reader, but once I started, I became a fanatic, and I've read a lot of books. But most of the books that I read and I value have a way to take me beneath the surface of things, I might say, beneath the surface of things, whether it's an adventure, whether it's a spy book, whether it's a book about the spirit, or a book about some religious experience a person has, or even a book about some carpentry experience or a beekeeper's experience. There, if it can take me beneath the surface of the facts of it, I can go with it.
Okay, Richard, you got anything to add? Yeah.
Well, I mean, you had mentioned, you know, it's different putting together a nonfiction book as opposed to a fiction book. And I noted in the two that I did, the two nonfiction, there was a lot of research that you do. You gather your material up, and no matter how big the book can be, you still don't get everything into it that you researched. So I was curious with this latest book, what didn't make the cut? Was there anything that you did not get in that maybe was close to getting in? You know, why didn't it get in there? You know, what was the process on figuring out, okay, this can get in, but this can't?
Well, I wanted to reach some median area of people where people who had deep spiritual interest could find something to be interested, where people who like the idea of the social work idea, people who like to travel and the beautiful scenes in some of those photos, people who had all those interests and more. I wanted to hit something of each of those, people who have psychological introspection. Some of the quotes are there. And I think some pretty good quotes and good pictures. So, of course, there were thousands of pictures I looked through. I certainly couldn't. I had to be selective about the photos. The quotes I was a lot more selective about, because first of all, I don't have as many quotes as I had photos. I'm not that prolific quote-wise. I hope never to be. And second of all, the idea of saying things that are interesting to me but are not translatable to somebody to read them, or are so private and personal that they're really nobody's business but my own, I certainly wouldn't put them in there, or put them in there in a way that they wouldn't be interpretable by another person as something of value. So the process of writing I've discovered is definitely seeing what means something to you, but you also have to, in doing that, see the language that you use be the same language of the people that you're reaching out to. Not so much, it's clearly obvious in matters like if you're writing in French, you're not going to reach an English speaking or reading people. But if you're speaking in a vocabulary that you yourself have developed amongst some people, and you put out that vocabulary, every word you use might be interpreted differently by somebody else. So you have to hear also how what you're writing sounds like somebody else. If it sounds offensive to somebody else, if it sounds meaningful to somebody else. So I sorted through the things that I wrote, because some of the things are in vocabulary that's really, I've worked out that those definitions for myself over years and years. So I wouldn't use those words. I tried to write things that are meaningful to people. I have this one particular one, this quote, which is this picture, which is a picture of a Brahma bull from, I don't remember if it was from Southeast Asia or India, but it's a picture of a bull. And I write a quote on it that's something like, when people start out saying something and then they change what they're saying to something else to try to throw the person off where they are, I call that bull shifting.
Right.
And so
I love that term, incidentally.
I love it too. I made it right up on the spot, and I thought, this is somebody that everybody can understand.
Absolutely.
And I wanted the book to be like that.
Uh-huh. You understand that I'll probably steal that phrase from you now. You know, seriously.
Oh, absolutely. I hope people are going to take it. I have one quote here that I would like to read, because it was particularly meaningful to me. And I thank you so much for coming up with it. The picture is of a sunset in Tahiti or Fiji. And your quote is, "Our human lives carry with them a promise. It's neither a religious promise nor a spiritual promise. It's a natural promise, and it comes to us one moment at a time. How can we appreciate these moments if it takes a Fijian sunset to slow us down?" You know, I grew up in an era that it's a go, 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 go all the time. It was go, go, go when I got drafted. It was go, go, go when I went to work for my dad. It was go, go, go when I ran companies. It was go, 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 go. I hit my Fijian sunset when I got sick, and I realized that I can't do this. I have to slow down. I have to be able to enjoy the moment, each and every moment as it comes to me in my life. And I so appreciate this phrase, because it hit on me harder than anything I've ever read in my life. So I thank you.
That's good to hear. It's one of the really special photos that I took. And because it looks like it had to be photoshopped, it's such a perfect picture, but it has not been photoshopped. It's just exactly the photo I took. And that moment when I was looking at it, I had that thought, like, wow, this could stop anybody. But isn't it too bad that it takes so much to stop anybody? Mm-hmm. And we really have to learn, without getting sick, how to slow down and how to really be participants in life one moment at a time. And we've certainly heard that word of be here now and one moment at a time and stop and smell the roses. But the actuality of doing that is a major challenge. We do have to be sympathetic with each other, because the demands to move on are tremendous. And the awareness of the downside of that has to be presented to us in some other way than being restricted by some external thing, and really to develop the knowledge and the wisdom and the awareness to know that there is a beauty in life that does not come across in explosions. It comes across in subtleties one moment at a time. Mm-hmm. And I hope that this particular book, because I think it's so for the other books that I've written, are studies in something other than cliche and extremeness. Because, as I say, the normality of life can be seen in a glorious way. And I think that that saying in that picture, which is also one of my favorites in the book, is a delineation of that understanding.
Well, the the truth of it is that I believe you hit on something that is inherent with mankind today. I mean, instead of slowing down, people are speeding up. They're not they're not listening to their inner clock. They're not doing what they should be doing. But they're, you know, everything is move forward, fast. I want a promotion. I want it today. I mean, I just started working for you yesterday. Mm-hmm. You know? And that's really unfortunate, because it does, right now, it does take being sick or having to retire or whatever it is to teach you to slow it down a little bit. You know, that's when you can learn to stop and smell the roses. Of course, you have to have roses to smell, but, you know.
Do you think that in this last year and a half that COVID has done some to teach that lesson?
To a degree, but I think the people that continue to charged even harder. Mm-hmm. Charged right through it. So
interesting.
Yeah, don't go away. I believe we're due for another break. And you are listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is The Writer's Block. We will be right back with you right after this brief word from Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books.
Congratulations, you finally finished that book. Now what are you going to do with it? Well, as a new writer, you probably do what all new writers do, stick it in the drawer with the other six or seven. Well, why not this time do something a little different? Why not get a hold of Black Dog Publishing and our fine imprint of Tuscany Bay Books? See, we can get that book out of the drawer. We can proofread it. We can edit it. We can format it. We can publish it. We can print it. We can copyright it. And we can get it on the shelf so your friends, your neighbors, your relatives, hell, even a person you don't know or two or three might want to buy a copy. It's all what it's about. And all of this for less than the cost of your firstborn. So why not give us a shot? BlackDogPublishing.co, TuscanyBayBooks.com, your answer to getting your book published, and right now we're probably the best at what we do in this industry. Black Dog Publishing, Tuscany Bay Books.
And we are back with our guest tonight, Mr. Justin Gold, and of course Richard and myself. And if you want to call and talk to Justin or Richard or me, why would you want to talk to me? I don't know. But the number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. You can dial it direct, and our good friend Sam Hassan will answer the phone, and he'll direct you right into the studio. And if you want to call and talk to Justin, please feel free. Let's talk a minute about process, Justin, because a lot of different writers have a lot of different ways of doing things. And I'm sure being what you do for a living is, I guess you call yourself a counselor of sorts. I don't know.
Would that be close? Go on.
Would that be close?
Actually, I play music. I invest money. I don't do nothing that I do in terms of people and advising do I involve money in, nor have I ever.
Okay. So what you do on the side, when do you find time to sit down and write, or when is your favorite time to write?
Well, it's an interesting question, because sometimes frequently in the middle of the night, I think of an idea that I want to preserve, and I develop it over maybe 10 minutes before I go back to sleep, maybe 15 minutes before I go back to sleep, and thinking that I'm going to remember it in the morning. And after years, I realized in the morning, what was that thing? And I couldn't recover it. So I've come to keep a pad by my bed. And if I get an idea that I think is unique and I think is memorable, then I'll get up and I'll write it down. And I'm fortunate enough not have to get up and keep regular hours. So I'm able to make up the sleep in the morning if I have to, or go to sleep earlier. But I do have that experience. I don't have the type of discipline, nor have I ever, to say, as some authors have, they say, sit down and make yourself write for a period of time. If I get inspiration, I can write like crazy. If I don't get inspiration, I'll sit down at the piano, or I'll pick up my guitar, or I'll take a walk, or I'll play with some of the animals around here. But I don't have that force myself to write. But I do respect people who can do that. I know really, but my modus operandi basically has been wait for the inspiration and write it down if you can, and then develop it later.
Okay. Did you ever find, or have you ever found, that you've been able to maintain a dream and wake up in the morning and remember everything about the dream, start to finish?
I have tried, but it's not something I'm good at. I have this theory about dreams that there are so many radio stations going on, there's so much electricity going on, that it may even be that your dream is a synthesis of your dream plus other stations coming in at the same time. Like it used to be when I was a kid and I tried to tune the stations and you got three stations at one time. So I don't know if that's accurate or not. I'm not a student of dreams, but I have not been successful at maintaining dreams in that way, and even remembering them clearly in the morning. I mostly have been a student of the waking days and my waking life. I have not been a student of my my dream life.
Gotcha. Well, I was fortunate enough to have a dream, four years ago, maybe 3 years ago. I dreamt the entire story, start to finish, the plot, everything. And when I woke up the following morning, it was still there. And it was screaming to be written. So it was written, and it became actually a book that was used in colleges for history. The name of the title is Jonah Blue. It's about mountain men, and along with the research that but I swear to God, all the way through the book, it was there in the dream. Even the names of the characters.
That's were there. Extraordinary.
It was. Believe me, it's the easiest book I ever wrote, and it turned out to be one of the best books I ever wrote.
That's how Escaping Infinity came to be. It was out of a sequence of dreams I was having during the week where my subconscious was yelling at me, hey, this is how we're going to solve a problem. And I'm too stubborn to listen to my subconscious, so I just kept hammering away. But, you know, I think for a lot of authors, especially fiction, our dream state is basically us working on the next idea while we're sound asleep. Mm-hmm. I think you would agree with that.
I do.
Yeah. I mean, if you know, Jim, that was an amazing, I was kind of around Jim when he was putting Jonah Blue together. So I think that's kind of a unique situation where you've got the whole thing just pops in like that. I wish it would happen to me sometimes because it'd get past some areas where I'm stuck, but Do you agree with that? I mean, do you think that some of our dreams is us trying to work out a problem we just can't see while we're awake?
I'm sure that's the case because first of all, in dreams, you don't have to deal with the activities of you have to do this and you have to do that. It does free up something. What exactly frees up sometimes is bizarre and sometimes is constructive. And if you can sort out the difference between those two things, that's an art form right there. I know that the complex in writing fiction, which I've had a little experience at, to even keep track of the plot yourself. I don't know if you guys make charts and write where a person is, but I know for myself, I've written a couple. I wrote a spy novel, a financial intrigue novel, took place in Cuba. And I had trouble following the plot myself, and I had to keep going back to make sure I didn't contradict myself. So if you have too many characters, or even if you have a few characters and a few twists in there, if you can work that out in your dreams, you have an art form going there.
In my case, I always write the first chapter, then I write the last chapter, and then we go back to the end of the first chapter, and let's see how we're going to get there. And that's kind of my writing process right there, which is insane. It sounds insane, but it works. And I think that's a lesson for all writers. There's no one correct way to write. Find the way that works for you and go with it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. It's something else that I have followed over the years is character development. I believe firmly in a character that's developed is going to keep the reader's interest a lot longer. It doesn't have to be 12 pages of character development. It can be 6 paragraphs. But all characters should have at least somewhat of a redeeming quality. If they don't, then they're bad guys. I mean, that's just plain and simple. And that's one of my favorite places to write is bad guys. I love bad guys. Bad guy, when you write a bad guy, you can do anything that you ever wanted to do and get away with it. And dialogue is another one that Richard and I are really, really sticklers on is dialogue. And of course, your book that we did not have any dialogue in it. But I'm sure that you have written dialogue. And how do you find dialogue to write? Do you find it hard? Do you go back and do you speak your dialogue out loud?
Well, I think there are probably exceptions, but all the characters that I have brought into the books that I've written that involve dialogue are constructs of people that I've actually known. They may be not absolutely people that I've known, but they're combinations of people that I've known. So I usually have the voice in my head of that person or those people. And some people that I know say, "Hey, I think, is that me?" And nobody is actually me in that book, but there are composites of people that I've known. I'm not really that creative that I could make up a person from scratch, and I have not done that. But I like what you say about the redeeming quality, because in everything that I've written in some characters that are less than admirable characters. But I always try to show that a human being, no matter how less than admirable that person might be, has an admirable quality in them. And I try to do that. I have not gone for anyone who's a full-on bad guy. And when I did go for a full-on bad guy, I found redemption at the end for that full-on bad guy. Because I like stories that have happy endings. I'm a sentimental and emotional guy in that way. So I have the stories I've written either have to-be-continued kind of endings where you have to figure out for yourself what you want to write. And certainly in this latest book of the photographs and the quotographs, all the pictures are of positive, possible situations. They're possible, uplifting situations, even though you could look at them and think of the downside of them, which, of course, exists all over the place. Mm-hmm. But
okay, we're going to take one last real quick break, and then we'll be back with you. So don't go away. We're listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is the Writer's Block. And we'll be right back with you right after a brief word from Creative Edge Publicity.
Hi, Jim Christina here for Creative Edge Publicity. And you know there's a reason that authors flock to Creative Edge? Yes, it's true, and no one would believe it, but it is true. Creative Edge, the grassroots publicity firm that has stayed community-minded, is growing. And not only growing, but busting right out of their seams. With a client base of over 70 authors, 2 New York Times bestsellers, 6 USA Today bestsellers, and multiple international bestsellers and award winners, Creative Edge in 4 years has become one of the mainstays in the publicity book market, offering reader-focused opportunities in all levels of media, including podcasts, radio, TV, print, and much more. When it comes to publicity, Mickey Mickelson and Creative Edge are experts in the book industry. Look him up at www.creative-edge.services. Creative Edge, it's your brand, your future.
And we are back, speaking with author Justin. There we go. We're back. We're speaking with Justin Gold and, of course, Richard Polinelli and myself. And Justin, we're going to have about 5 minutes left, so I'm going to ask you a question. I don't know if you can answer, but we're going to ask you. The name of this program is The Writer's Block. Now, this last book, I'm guessing that you didn't have writer's block, but in your previous novels or books, did you have writer's block? And if you did, how did you get out of it?
Well, certainly in the first book that I wrote, it took me 7 or 8 years to, from the beginning to the end. I had a myriad of writer's block, not so much because I didn't have material, but I really didn't know how to put it together. And it became more and more challenging to put it together because I had never written something. It was fairly long, 100,000 words. It was fairly long for me. And so what I did was I gave it to my friends. I had them read it. I had them make suggestions. I listened to their ideas. I argued with them. I made a lot of enemies out of them.
Yeah, it happens.
But some of those ideas were really precious, and those ideas got me going. And as I said, I wasn't at that time even having to work regular hours, so I could, anytime I got an idea, I could go after it and like that. I've always been, I think it's important, as you said, to not quit your day job, or even to make money something separate than it be your passion, if writing is your passion, and find ways to make money that don't involve necessarily being famous, that don't involve necessarily getting love or accolades, but just keep the money separate, make the money, and then and then do the writing. And then you'll have more time to do that, and it'll be more separate. So I certainly had intervals where I didn't know how to proceed, but I've always and still have a group of friends that are very supportive, very interested, are creative in their own ways, whether it be music or art, and are willing to give me input. In fact, very willing to give me input. And but then again, when it comes down to the final analysis, and you have to go with what you think, it's your book. And if as many changes as has happened or people imagine, then you have to take them or leave them or use the improvements, right, and go with it and see, right, what you got.
Right. You know, unfortunately, we are out of time. If you wouldn't mind giving our listeners your web address and where they can find you, email you, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. If you look up justingold.com, justingold.net. Yes, justingold.net. And all of my stuff is there, the public talks I've given, the everything, all the books and everything, it's all there. The, you could either look up J.J. Gold, and J, the second J is J-Y-E. There was a peanut butter baron named Justin Gold, and if you look, just look Justin Gold under Google, you got a lot of the peanut butter guy. And so I tried to separate myself from the peanut butter guy, and I started writing under J.J. Gold.
Gotcha.
J-J-Y-E Gold. But justingold.net has all the, anything you could be interested in that relates to me is on that website. Even the puppet shows that we put together and the social work that we've done. And let me say this one more thing. I don't do anything that I do for money. And if anybody is interested in any of these books or anything that I do and they can't afford it, just write me an email or write an email to the website and we'll take care of it, because we're able to do that. And what the hell?
Well, Justin, thank you so much for taking the time out to be with us tonight. It's been a real pleasure having you with us. And the time just flew by. It just, you know, it does that when you have an interesting guest, and you were by any means an interesting guest. So there you have it. And again, we thank you so much for joining us tonight, and wish you the very best in this book. I would highly recommend it. The title is, where is it? I got it. It is, oh, come on.
The Currency of Moments.
Oh, Exploring Life's Anomalies Through Images and Ideas.
The book is called
The Currency of Moments.
Moments.
Yeah, right.
There you go.
Yeah. And yes. By J.J. Gold, J-J-A-Y-E Gold. And you can find it on Amazon. You can find it just about any place they sell books online. Okay. We are proud to have you with us, and thank you so much again for joining us.
Okay.
Next week, we have a writer that is been back a few times. Mr. Ken LaSalle will be joining us, and he's got a new book out, and it's about a kid who wants to take over the world. It's just a lot of fun to get these people in there. And right now, for Richard, myself, Bobby Jean Bell could not be with us, and we miss you, Bobby. Mr. Sam Hasson, the owner and engineer of LA Talk Radio, and myself, Jim Christina, we are out of here.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.